Welcome to episode 1341 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Throughout the Old Testament, a pattern emerges. God forbids images. But then the people, even those who claim to be the people of God, repeatedly try to create them anyway. And each time, something breaks. Each time, God reveals why the commandment exists. Today, we want to explore some stories. But note, these are not just stories about ancient Israel. They are diagnostic stories. They show us what happens when we try to contain God in a form. They show us the seduction of sacred objects. They show us how even good gifts become dangerous when we forget what they actually are. Let's start with Moses' farewell speech. On the plains of Moab, east of the Jordan River, opposite Jericho, the man who had led a stubborn people for 40 years in the wilderness takes them back to Mount Sinai.
You heard the sound of words but saw no form. There was only a voice. He declared to you his covenant, the Ten Commandments, which he commanded you to follow.
Notice the structure given here in Deuteronomy. God spoke. God did not show a form. The people heard words. They experienced relationship through speech, not through sight. Moses then says something crucial.
And since you saw no form of any kind, the day the Lord spoke to you at Sinai from out of the fire, do not act corruptly by making a carved image for yourselves in the form of any figure.
Here is the rationale for the commandment. God did not give the people a form to copy, because God reveals himself through voice and covenant, not through visual containment. Speech keeps God relational. Speech keeps God free. A voice can always say something new. A form can only be what it is. But the people struggle with this. They want something tangible. They want something they can see and touch and carry with them. So they build the Ark of the Covenant, a sacred object that houses the tablets of the law and represents God's presence. This is not inherently wrong. God commands it. But listen to what happens when the Ark becomes more important than obedience.
The Philistines fought, and the Israelites were defeated. The Ark of God was captured. When the news came that the Ark of God had been captured, Eli's son Phinehas' wife went into labor and died. As she was dying, the women attending her said, "Don't despair, you have given birth to a son." But she did not respond or pay attention.
Israel treated the Ark as a magical object. They believed possessing it guaranteed victory. They brought it into battle as a talisman, a good luck charm, and they were defeated anyway. The point is devastating. Even holy objects become idols when they are used to manipulate outcomes rather than honor God's presence. Sacred symbols are dangerous when detached from obedience and humility. The Ark itself was not the problem. The problem was that Israel had replaced relationship with God with possession of an object. Now consider the bronze serpent. In Numbers 21, the people are bitten by snakes. God tells Moses to make a bronze serpent and lift it up. Whoever looks at it will live. It is a miracle. It is a sign of God's healing power. But listen to what happens generations later. In 2 Kings 18, verse 4.
Hezekiah removed the high places, smashed the sacred stones, and cut down the Asherah poles. He broke into pieces the bronze serpent Moses had made, for up to that time the Israelites had been burning incense to it. He called it Nehushtan.
Hezekiah calls it Nehushtan, just a piece of bronze. A gift from God has become an idol. The object that once pointed toward God's power to heal has become the object of worship itself. This story teaches something crucial. Even gifts from God can violate the second commandment when they outlive their purpose. Faith must never fossilize. A symbol that once carried meaning can become hollow, and when it does, it must be destroyed. Isaiah, the prophet, cannot contain his sarcasm in Isaiah 44 when he looks at idolatry.
As for an image, a craftsman casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and fashions silver chains for it. A person too poor to present an offering selects wood that will not rot. He looks for a skilled craftsman to set up an image that will not topple. Part of the wood he burns in the fire. Over it he prepares his meal. He roasts his meat and eats his fill. From the rest he makes a god, his idol. He bows down to it and worships.
The same wood, for cooking, for warmth, and for worship. The irony is devastating. An idol is not only false, it is self-referential. It mirrors human limitation rather than transcending it. You made it from wood you had lying around. How could it be divine? Isaiah is exposing the fundamental absurdity of image making. Idols do not reveal God, they reveal us. They are projections of human desire, human fear, human limitation. They cannot possibly capture the infinite God. But what about the temple? Solomon builds it with extraordinary care and expense. And when he dedicates it, he does something remarkable, as recorded in 1 Kings 8, verse 27.
But will God really dwell on earth? The heavens, even the highest heaven, cannot contain you, how much less this temple I have built.
Solomon is saying, I have built this beautiful structure. God may choose to dwell here, but I acknowledge the fundamental truth. God cannot be contained. The temple exists to host God's presence, not replace it. God is not trapped in a building. God is not domesticated by architecture. But what happens when people forget this? What happens when the temple becomes an idol? When people trust in its existence rather than in God's character? Listen to Ezekiel in Ezekiel 10, verse 18.
Then the glory of the Lord departed from over the threshold of the temple and stopped above the cherubim.
God's glory leaves the temple. Why? Because the people had made the temple itself into an idol. They had forgotten that the temple was meant to honor God's presence, not trap it. And God, refusing to be domesticated, departed. This is the radical claim of the second commandment. God cannot be domesticated. If worship becomes hollow or distorted, God refuses to be treated as an object that can be stored, owned, or controlled. Finally, consider the plagues. Each one confronts an Egyptian god, a false image and representation. Turning water to blood confronts the Nile god. Darkness confronts Ra, the sun god. The death of the firstborn confronts Pharaoh himself, who claimed divinity. Each plague shows the same truth. False images collapse when confronted by the living God. Idols do not merely mislead, they misrepresent reality. They claim power they do not have. And when the real God shows up, they are exposed. These Old Testament stories are not ancient curiosities. They are a sustained polemic against image making. They show us sacred objects can become idols when detached from relationship and obedience. Gifts from God can become violations of God's character when we stop understanding their purpose. Idols expose human limitation, not divine reality. Even holy places can trap us if we forget that God cannot be contained. False images collapse in the presence of the living God. Each story answers a question. Why does God forbid images? Because God is alive. God is free. God will not be domesticated. God cannot be stored or controlled or owned. And any attempt to do so, no matter how sacred the object, no matter how good the intention, ultimately separates us from genuine relationship with God. Where are you treating a sacred symbol, a belief, a tradition, an object, a practice, as if it could substitute for actual relationship with God? What have you made into an idol? Not consciously, but what has become more important to you than the living God? What are you trusting more than you are trusting God? We want to invite you to examine something sacred in your own faith. Is there a belief you have held so long that you never question it? Is there a practice you perform without thinking about why? Is there a tradition you defend without asking what it actually means? Hold it up to the light. Ask, does this bring me closer to God? Or has it become a substitute for closeness to God? Is this object, belief, or practice alive? Or has it fossilized? You may discover you need to do what Hezekiah did. Break it. Destroy it. Call it what it really is. Throughout the Old Testament, a consistent truth emerges. God will not be contained. God will not be domesticated. God will not be stored in an object or frozen in a form. Instead, God insists on relationship. God insists on freedom. God insists on the kind of encounter that cannot be managed or controlled or possessed. The second commandment protects this. By forbidding images, God is protecting the truth that God is alive. God speaks. God moves. God is free. And any time we try to trap God in a form, whether carved stone or frozen theology or sacred tradition, God breaks free. God walks away. God leaves the building. Because God will not be treated as an idol. God will only be known as the living God who speaks, who challenges, who calls us into relationship that transforms us. Father, help us see where we have made idols, not with hands, but our hearts. Help us break them. Help us stop trying to contain you. Help us encounter you as the living God you actually are. That's our episode. Remember, God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full. Today,